And welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I'm Jessica Vosk. And this is the true crime podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer. And hello, Sarah Edmondson.
Here comes Miss Sarah.
Sarah.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
It is going. Hey, killers. We are so thrilled today to have the Sarah Edmondson with us, all the way from Vancouver. Is that right, Sarah?
Yes, Vancouver, Canada.
How's the weather?
Oh, it's so dreary outside right now. This is a perfect day to be inside and do a podcast. It's just gross out.
Well, for our listeners who have intently been watching The Vow as much as Jen and I have, Jen just finished it.
I did.
That's how I came to know you, came to have an obsession with you, Sarah. I'm not a stalker. Don't worry about it. But I will say, and to all of our, you know, women fans listening out there who we know and love and adore, Sarah is who I would consider to be on the top of the pyramid of badass women for so many reasons. And we're going to get into all of that. But Sarah, if you could succinctly tell us and tell our listeners who maybe have not had the education that we have had on Nexium and your life story, where'd you grow up and what was your path or ultimate goal or dream that somehow took you and led you on the path of joining Nexium?
Wow. That's a epic question. That's back when I was born in 1977. No, I've actually learned how to make this more succinct. So long story short, I've been a performer, actor since I was really little. Did, you know, musical theater in high school. Then I went and got my BFA, which I also call fondly my Bachelor of Fuck All. in theater performance. And had a really weird experience there where, like, I'm going to weave more acting stuff into this because I think that's probably your audience.
Well, we've got a lot of both, but we have a ton of viewers who love to hear about both of these things. And we've not yet had a guest on who can speak to both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it relates because it's like kind of what drove me to get into it, kind of also relates in terms of, you know, how I was able to get out of it and be the spokesperson for that in a way. But don't want to jump to that yet. So I got my BFA in theater performance in a time in a program in Montreal where, like, there was some transition in the bureaucratic whatever bullshit, where somehow I managed to be in a class of 16 people and never have, like, a good juicy lead role in a show. Yeah, I don't know. And I got out of being, like, feeling so screwed and, like, fuck you to theater in general, because I don't know what would have happened if I had a good experience. But I say that because at the time I had a boyfriend who had an agent and he was doing TV, and I was like, wow, this pays great. I'm like, this is fun. And I kind of, like, put theater aside slowly and did a couple more shows after that. But my point being is that I went into film and TV shortly after graduating, and then never really did anything else after that. But it was never fulfilling enough for me. And even the choice to go into theater school versus I was maybe be a psychologist like my parents, because I love to help people and I love to work with people. And that was something that had just been part of my upbringing, just like helping people work through challenges and being a camp counselor and the kind of person who always has everything that anyone might need in their purse is just sort of like who I am.
I love that reference to making sure that you have everything you need in your purse, because you would help me, because I drove 45 minutes the other day to only realize that I did not have my license. Sarah, go on.
Yes. I say that because when I got out of theater school and I was starting acting and doing auditions, it was like, oh, this is not fulfilling. I have a greater purpose. Like, my parents have always been very socially and politically active. And even when I was going to become a psychologist, I might become a drama therapist and help people through drama, because I had done play therapy when I was a little girl and my parents divorced. And anyway, so many options. Cut to, I moved back to Vancouver. I'm done my degree. I'm feeling aimless. I work a little bit so I could say I'm an actor, but, like, not fulfilling enough. And I saw a film called What the Bleep Do We Know? And What the Bleep was a film that really started my spiritual journey of looking at how do we create the life that we want. And I was like, well, for sure, I'm not living the life that I want. And here's this person who made a film who is like shifted consciousness through media. And I was like, you know, that moves me. And even just to bring it back to Wicked, like when Jess first reached out, like I keep putting these old man glasses on so I can see you guys.
But I love it. So I don't think they're hideous at all. I didn't even notice. Okay.
I've just ordered some from Warby Parker and then are in the mail. And these are like,
these are Warby's guru. Great minds, great minds.
But when you reached out, like when I think back to Wicked, just to tie that in for a second, like that's the kind of show that I would watch and I'd be moved by, you know? And I was driving with Troy on the way to school and I was crying, listening to some of those songs that so moved me. And like, that's why I want to be an artist. You know, I want to help people shift, to have catharsis, to cry, to emote, to relate, to feel deeply. And I wasn't doing that in my acting, playing like, you know, Budweiser girl number three and like the vampire girl, you know, like it's just, it wasn't fulfilling, right?
Sure, of course. Unless you make it feel, unless somehow as Budweiser girl number three, you have a monologue about why those hops are so delicious. But
I do want to say, this may not be the time to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
I do have to tell you, Sarah, having watched The Vow, when they do show clips of some of your film career, I think there's one where you're on the stairs and there's blood on your collar or something.
Blood
and
on my taffeta, Carl.
Yes, but here's what I want to say. I thought your acting was excellent. I really did. I thought she's good and she's beautiful. I'm like, she's got it. I mean, you are, gorge. I was a fan in a clip. So I kid you not. You're welcome. So
that clip wasn't 20 years old. I'd put it back on my demo reel.
There are no rules in 2020, Sarah.
That's true. No, I do appreciate that. I do like acting, and for all the reasons I just said, I was like, there's more for me. You know, what is it?
But that makes sense that something felt like it was missing. And we always, again, as actors, three actors sitting in this little Zoom room right now, we are empaths. And we, you know, like you said, you took an interest in psychology. I think we all kind of have, like, I'm certainly interested in the psychology.
I'm taking classes now. Jess and I talk about this all the time. Yeah, I'm taking forensic psychology and criminology. And Jessica often talks on the show about her interest in the law. And again, I don't know if this is the time, but we're just girls talking. Yeah, I have to tell you, Sarah, everything you went through, one thing I was thinking of watching this, and Jessica and I, this is the first time you're hearing it, but I know you're not going to be surprised. One of the things your colleague Mark said is no one decides to join a cult. You do something that you think is going to be empowering and helpful. And all the self-help things I've done in my life, whether it's workout or a food program or the artist's way, there are so many things that I could see myself absolutely being in your shoes and making these choices because I'm always looking to better myself. And we are so trained, Jessica and I, in our industry, to be the best at something. So I can just see me like, I'm not settling for this color sash. I'm going to get, you know.
Up that straight path.
Yes. So I just want to say that. I'm excited to talk to you, as you were saying, but, you know.
No, I appreciate that. And that's, you know, not everybody has that. There's people who are like, well, I would never fall for that. That's for stupid people. I'm like, whatever.
I don't agree.
Hold on to that and don't prepare yourself for falling into an abusive relationship. That's right.
I kept saying, and I say it to people all the time, watching you, watching your colleagues, watching everyone who has found themselves in a situation, whether it be with NXIVM or in Scientology or in, you know, you fill in the blank. These are incredibly well-educated, very smart, hip with it, human beings who said something's missing and I want to figure out what that something is. That's where I'd like to get back to, Sarah, if you're okay.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll tie back to what Jennifer just said, is that I was actually in an Artist's Way group with my girlfriends who were mostly actors. And in fact, I think all of them were actors, and I was helping them like my parents would with their goals and whatever. And we were all kind of going in circles with getting stuck in the same points because I'm not a therapist, you know, and the Artist's Way can only take you so far. And I love the Artist's Way, big part of my creative side. But around that time that I met Mark, this is a long story, so I'm going to kind of condense it.
Sure.
And the details of it, as you know, are more in the book. But I met him at a film festival, the guy who made What the Bleep Do We Know. And I was just like, whatever you're doing, I want to be a part of it because I want to shift consciousness. I want to be part of this community and we're making shit happen and blah, blah, blah. So in answer to your question, where was I and what's my story? As I got involved in this group, I thought it was amazing. And obviously, for many reasons, I, you know, poured my heart and soul into it and answered a lot of questions for me and gave me a lot of purpose. And I went up that straight path, like you said, Jennifer, because I wanted to be so good and prove myself. And I think also going back to acting, wait, I'm going to bookmark that. Just to answer your first question, my mind is so tangential. When we figured out that it was bad, that it was not what we thought it was 12 years later, my husband and I were the whistleblowers to expose the group. So that's the summary to answer your first question. But just to go back to the acting thing and the straight path, one of the things I really liked about the model in what it's supposed to be, and obviously we found out later it's not this, it's just a load of shit, but we thought it was this method to measure your growth. And I think as actors, at least for me, I felt so frustrated that you could, you know, put all your energy into an audition and even maybe look the part and have all the things, but you don't get it because whatever, the producers, you remind the producer of his ex-wife or something. Or
like, amen. The things you can't control.
New things you can't control. And I like to control things.
Girl, you know? Hey, welcome to this room. You are in the right room, girl. We're all raising our hands
here.
We started
a group called Controllers Anonymous.
That's right.
A spinoff of this podcast. So yeah, I just was like, okay, finally something where I can exert effort, do X, Y, and Z, and then go to the next level.
Absolutely.
And that felt so good to me, you know, and I went up those stripes very, very fast, as you know. And I got stuck and it was all about my issues and like how I wasn't overcoming certain things. And anyway, I know you have questions. So
one of my questions, Sarah, about the straight path, I remember in the film you said, at first I thought, the hell are these stripes? What is this sash? You know, like, and certainly I can relate to that because I would have done the same thing. But then once you know that it gives you some kind of power and that exists, you know, because once that hits your brain of like, okay, once I move up, then I'm becoming more successful. And I know, as my, you know, controlling anonymous personality would say, that's what I want. And I guess my question is, and then you talked about hitting a roadblock, which had to do with all of your quote issues. And within your time period of climbing the ladder of sash success and then figuring out that you hit a roadblock and it was because of your issues, were you timid or unsure of the group at any of this time? Were you like, this seems a little like shitty. Why am I in this roadblock now? Does it just have to do with me?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely entertain those thoughts, but I think it was so part of the culture where, like, if other people left, for example, and they left on good terms, like not like us trying to destroy the company, but like, oh, I'm going to go do this now. It was always spoken about, especially as you got higher up, higher rank, you'd be privy to these conversations. You know, well, Jessica, of course, went to New York to pursue her acting career, you know, as if that's like a bad thing. You know, she's never going to work on those control issues. Mm-hmm. And right. And she'll hit up against that eventually.
Right. A nice gaslighting way of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was set up as like a trigger in my mind to gaslight myself to even if I thought about leaving, like, well, then I'm not going to get through this.
Yeah.
That makes total sense.
I'm sure I'm speaking for a lot of people, but thank you all for what you did. I was really moved by what you did, not only for yourselves, but for Tony, Susan, Barbara, like the people that came before you who had to wait so long for justice. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm sorry.
Okay, I got some toilet paper.
Oh, she's got toilet paper.
You know, I got to tell you, this is my superpower, you guys. And it's my kryptonite, so I'm sorry. Quick story just to make you laugh. It was my sister-in-law marrying my brother, and her mother was there and so excited for the wedding. And here I am thinking I'm missensitive, and I go up to her mother, and I was like, yeah, your little girl's getting married today, huh? Sobbing, makeup destroyed, you know, like.
Jeez, Jen.
Yeah, I know. Could I just keep it light? Keep it light, Brett and Gay. Anyway.
Come on.
So thank you for everything you did.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for saying that. I hope that they have peace. And they, you know, they worked really hard to do what we did, and they it didn't work, you know? Yeah. And that must be really painful because their lives were destroyed way more than ours were, you know, way more pain.
Well, it's such a lesson, isn't it, that sometimes if you think it doesn't pay off, moving the football down the field matters, even if you don't get success right away. You know?
I've actually told them all that multiple times. Yeah, because we also learned from them. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we learned is that you don't confront Keith.
Wow.
No, you don't try to work it out. And that's what they did. They tried to work it out and they tried to confront him and bring these issues to light because they didn't understand really the magnitude of his sociopathy.
Oh, yeah. And Sarah, can you tell our listeners, can you introduce our listeners to Keith? How would you explain and express, you know, if they were to meet him for the first time and shed a little light into your world of meeting this guy and understanding what he did?
Sure. And he did change over the 12 years that I was there. Like when I started, he was this schlubby little gnome, like hairy Jesus hair and headband and knee pads at volleyball. Around 2009, when those women left, the ones I just mentioned, they kind of rebranded him, no pun intended. Yeah. I gave him like nice shirts and a haircut and he looked more polished. You can see that in the vow, like his
absolutely,
his shift, which was great. Cause I was like, guys, people think we're a cult. Like you should probably clean up Keith's image a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know? But yeah, he, you know, by the time I met him, I had already taken so much training that he'd been revered to me. Like I really respected his mind. I respected what I thought he'd built. Now I know he's stolen it all. So I was excited to meet him, but I was very kind of taken aback about how normal and schlubby he was, you know, which is also something like whenever Keith did a forum or a talk for new people, like at his 10-day birthday celebration, I don't know if that's not a red flag for a megalomaniac. I don't know what is, but
it sure is now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you ever join a group and they have a 10-day birthday celebration,
right around day seven, you need to get
abort,
to reconsider.
Yeah.
Abort.
Yeah. Reconsider. Abort. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And fortunately they made it so fun that I didn't even think about that. It was like summer camp for adults.
Well, hence why nobody did.
And by the way, alone. Yeah.
And to our listeners, we are talking about the founder of Nexium. His name is Keith Raniere. So please proceed because I remember in the vow watching that brand switch again, no pun intended, but the switch of, you know, Jesus juice to corporate leader.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big switch. So what happened was like every time he spoke, Nancy would always come out on stage and be like, wasn't he amazing? Wasn't he just incredible? I go, oh, and like gush and, you know, fell. And she'd always ask the audience, like, who's seeing Keith for the first time? And how was it for you? And someone would always put up their hand and say, yeah, it was great, but surprised about how kind of normal he is. Like just a guy. And Nancy would spin that and say, isn't it amazing that he's such a humanitarian? He can bring himself down to like a normal person's level and just be so relatable.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. So we'd be like, wow, it's so cool that this brilliant man can make himself so accessible. Cause otherwise, how do you talk about dark matter and like quantum physics and you know, what are we going to talk about? Right. You got to talk about normal things, but really he was just a normal guy. I do think he was incredibly intelligent. Just turns out that he was also a sociopath and a sex addict and a douchebag. So put all those together.
And can you tell our listeners why Keith called himself Vanguard?
Yeah. So again, like with so many of the things that I learned when I was in it, there's like what we thought it was. And then later we found out what it actually was. Mm-hmm. And what we thought it was is that, and there was what we learned in the very first class is that there's titles in society. You know, the judge has your honor and doctor is doctor and professor is professor. Like those titles denote what people have built.
Oh,
right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
that's
actually,
sorry, Jessica and I, you don't know this about us, but we acquire titles as we go on. We like to pretend we're experts at everything.
So what title are you now?
We're cult experts. We're now cult experts.
We're cult experts now, which we're not. But that's
what we're totally doing.
Okay.
But like there's truth in that. Like I like calling my doctor, doctor. And when we're out of the office, I call him by his first name. Right.
Ah, right.
And I feel good about paying, and this is an ESP term, paying tribute to what he had built, like my doctor's built. So his thing was that Nancy is a title prefect, which means head of a school, more digestible. Vanguard means leader of a philosophical movement.
Oh my.
Yeah. So if you believed that that there was a philosophical movement and there was a whole philosophical component to the curriculum, then it would kind of make sense. Like everything makes sense. To the point, like if I was to describe why we wore sashes and why we bowed and why we called him Vanguard and what all, everything had a logical reason. Even to people who, you know, stuck around and entered DOS, the women's group, and got branded, there was a logical reason, you know. Mm-hmm. Men in fraternities brand each other as part of the bonding, hazing, like all those things have logical reasons. And the people who still are involved and still loyal to Keith, they can spout this shit like, and I was good at it too. I understand why you're uncomfortable calling him Vanguard. Well, this is why we do it. There's a reason. It makes sense. If you put all that together and you look at it and you step back a little bit, you're like, oh my God, it's a fucking cult. Like, it's so obvious, right? But all of these things had to have like reasons behind them. And Vanguard is one of those things that was like, all right, like, okay, I'll call you back. But nobody, like, we called him Vanguard or V, like we called Nancy and Keith P and V, Prefect mm-hmm. and Vanguard.
Oh my God, that's my mother's initials.
It's in vagina, by the way.
Oh, what? Sarah.
I know, it's so dirty.
Well,
not that penises and vaginas are dirty, but his whole mind is dirty.
Right. And now for all mm-hmm. of you listening, when Sarah talks about Vanguard and Vanguard Week, this mm-hmm. is a 10-day, right, Sarah, birthday celebration for Keith Raniere, the founder of Nexium. Now, and again, summer camp for adults. And for those of you listening and for anybody who's watched this, you will have seen little clips where I believe everyone puts on a show for him. Is that right, Sarah?
Yeah. And that was the other thing. I think I emailed you when you
sure did
me, that we that they did Sweeney Todd one year.
Oh, yes. Who were you? I want to play the beggar
I wasn't
woman.
In it.
Oh, you weren't.
Yeah, I wasn't in it. So here's the thing. I'm an actor, right? So when I was there for 10 days, I saw people who weren't really actors. Some of them were actors. Some of them wanted to be actors, get like thrown into this. I think part of me intuitively was like, I know how to act. So it just felt like not a good use of my time. You know what I mean?
Well, listen, why right. take those 10 days? And Jen and I have, you know, we have certain productions where you can literally only get the production up in 7 to 10 days. So yeah. The stress is unnecessary.
It was unnecessary. And I even like people did performances and I was part of group performances. Every year, each center would do like a group tribute, like they'd sing a song or do a dance or one year we made a movie. Like we did different things. We're always trying to be creative. Mexico City Center, because they're come from a loaded, like everyone's really rich, they would do huge musical numbers from like Greece.
Wow.
Yeah. And like have all the outfits. I'm trying to think of what else they did, like massive music, like a song, not the whole show.
Still but, taking like, it full, the extra mile. That is taking that shit the extra mile.
The extra mile. Like there came a year was like, I can't compete with this. We did interpretive dance one year. It was like, it was always a stress to be like, what could we do to show Keith how grateful we are for all that he's done? And
ooh.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Now, you mentioned, go ahead, no, Jessica.
Jen, you must. I could talk forever.
Well, I unless you didn't want to move on, but I was intrigued because you brought up DOS. And so Jessica and I do have a few questions about DOS.
Sure.
For example, yeah. how long did it take for DOS to be created?
Well, I was in for 12 years and I got invited like a few months before I woke up. That was, okay. and naturally actually being in DOS, I mean, part of DOS is what woke me up. Thank God. But we found out later that it had been going on. I got invited in 2017. It had been going on since at least 2014.
Oh my good yeah. Lord.
And just in a small group. Mm-hmm. And apparently Keith had been planning this for a long time. He called it his blackmail MLM.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad you specified the timeline because in my head, it was associated with the election of 2016 / pantsuit nation / power to women. And it wasn't clear to me that it actually started prior to that. So it started
prior to that. Yeah. Okay. And it wasn't anything political for him. It was about, it seemed like he really crafted this idea when one of his main women that was part of his harem, he had had a secret baby with that they yeah. left. And I think he realized that he couldn't keep people like he had lots of women that were still around him for years and years and kept and they were loyal to him. And I think had in some ways had the same kind of like collateral, but not it wasn't like officially like I'm giving you this for collateral, but he had stuff on them. Right. And I think at a certain point when Kristen left, he thought, and this is Kristen Keefe. OK, not the other Kristen. But anyway, he decided, I think I've got to lock these women in with wow. something that's going to keep them there. And mm-hmm. he formalized it. Like I met somebody who was out of the harem for a long time. And she left to go pursue her studies and she left quietly and slipped away. And she reached out to me and she said, when she read about DOS, she said, that's what my life was like.
Oh,
you know, being ready for him at all hours, responding to texts, you know, being super, super thin. So he just kind of formalized what he did with women
wow.
in DOS.
Wow. And so, and I guess, you know, many, many people who are listening to this, DOS was we call it a subgroup of Nexium? Is that like, is that fair to say?
Yep. I mean, when we joined, we were told it was unrelated, which is, of course, ridiculous to think that now because everything was so insular. But we were told that this was unrelated. There was people involved that were from Nexium and not from Nexium. But
oh, wow. Yeah. That's wild. That's wild. And DOS, what did it stand for?
Oh God, I haven't said this in so long. Dominus Obsequious Sororium or something like the master over the slave women or the sorority of the slave women or something. All of his names had double meanings because DOS is also a computer term, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a total computer nerd.
This particular shit blows my mind because even in the few moments that we have had sitting here with Sarah, I can tell all of you that like, Sarah, you have your shit together. You are a strong woman in so many ways. And I think that, you know, I've heard some people say like, well, I could like Jen, like you made a point, Jen, earlier about like, well, I don't think I could ever see myself. You know, the people who are like, I couldn't possibly see myself doing that. That's for you guys. This is the type of thing where you don't even know. You don't even know. You don't even know. And so before you take that moment to say like this, you know, I would never. Just remember, these stories exist for a reason. And the fact that this subgroup existed and women in very powerful positions in their own lives were brought into this group, it actually doesn't surprise me. I probably would have been one of those women.
Mm-hmm. And if we had just met like in a show or something, I don't think that I could have invited you to DOS straight up. In fact, of all the women I know, there's one person that came through like DOS first and then other curriculum, but she had a really strong connection with the person who brought her in. For me, like once I was involved in Lauren, the person who brought me in mm-hmm. as my master, was like, you got to start bringing people in. I'm like, I can't just go off the street and be like, hey, do you want to join this group? And like, can I have a nude photo to ensure your secrecy? Like you'd be like, whoa, that's weird. Right.
Yes.
So much of what made me wrap my, you know, justify things in my head and gaslight myself were 12 years of indoctrination.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
In terms of, collateral was part of our lives since 2012.
Wow. Sarah, I had no idea that was the case. Wow.
Yeah, people were giving, it was just part of the culture. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, I'm going to write, I'm using theater references, like, let's say I'm going to write a play. I'm going to write a solo show. And if I don't write 20 pages by Sunday, I'm going to give $200 to a charity of choice or whatever.
Sure.
Like that kind of thing. We put things on the line to hold weight for our word, which is a cool concept. Like that's why collateral exists. I'm going to give you my house to borrow this money and there's something to back it up.
Of course.
So that became more and more commonplace. But, and this is something I've learned about myself, I'm outwardly obedient and inwardly a rebel. And this is what happened more and more over time. I'd be like, yes, I'm doing that. Like there were so many stupid things that we had to do to be like be at the level, like we had to enter a certain data. We had to check in on certain things. We had to follow. And I just stopped doing it.
Wow.
Like I stopped doing it, but I said that I was doing it.
Well, that's one thing I responded to as well as your friend Bonnie, you know, got to a point with the sleep deprivation, the calorie deprivation, where you physically can't sustain that level permanently. Yeah. Is that a fair thing to say?
Sure. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I had that to a degree with the sleep deprivation because I also had a little one at the time. Yeah. I was sleeping through the night. And then once you were part of the group, you had to answer texts at all hours. And often it came around 2 or 3 in the morning, which is like usually when I sleep the deepest.
Yeah.
So I was a bit of a mess. I never did the calorie counting thing. Thank God.
Good.
I was the one show up with a big bowl of quinoa and avocado. And
I remember you saying
dressing, right? And all the good things. Yeah. And then like people would be like, oh my God, that's so many calories. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's like good. Yeah.
Or I feel like you were like, my head. I think you were like, what? I went and got a shake. I would be the one to get the shake from the place and like have my like smoothie or some kind of thing. Yeah. And people would be like, you know, like I had 4 strawberries, you know, like that's, and as actors, trust me. I mean, we understand like when you walk into a room or you put yourself on a self tape, we are constantly, and as women, reminded of what we should look like or what is the perfect thing that we're supposed to attain.
A case of the twos. You're too fat, you're too thin, you're too tall, you're too short. Two,
right.
Two, two.
And that, And I want to amend what I said, that even though I never counted calories and I was very proud of that, and I'm proud to say I've still never counted calories, I was definitely obsessed with my fitness. And I'd say that was something that the whole culture, because all the women were very thin, and I didn't understand until later that was part of their regimen that they were on to be there and to bring teeth. I just always been kind of thin, but as I got older and acting and all those things and being a part of that group, I was like, oh, I gotta stay fit. Mm. You know, like I probably had a, I don't know what it's called when you like work out all the time, like that kind of body image.
Your body dysmorphia, I'm sure, for a lot of people. It's never enough.
Problem. Well, it's an addiction like anything else. Addiction, right?
Yeah. Right.
It's never enough.
I have a compliment that's going to lead into a question, and please tell me if it's too personal. But one thing that I really couldn't stop thinking about is how strong you and Nippy appeared. And I was very in love with your husband, not in that way, but when he defended you with Lauren.
Yeah, yeah.
But Bonnie and Mark, and I can't imagine the toll this could take on a marriage and the work to maintain it, because this person who's also the one person who probably gets what you went through is also the person you look at every day who reminds you of this time in your life. Mm-hmm. And I'm very impressed by all of you in that regard. And also, I just wonder about it, how you decided to speak to your husband about DOS and what had happened to you and how difficult that must have been. And I don't know if you can talk to us about that, but it's something we're curious about.
First of all, let me say, you can ask me anything. Like I really, after writing a book and putting myself out there and like the vow, there's really nothing that I feel like I can't.
Sarah, you are a rock star, number one. Jen is the married one here. I'm the one just looking for some action safely after the cocoa. Okay, everybody. Yeah. But you know,
I've never heard it called the cocoa.
Oh, I've coined it the cocoa row.
The cocoa. And okay. I call it the pandemic.
He calls it the 1-9.
Yeah. The 1-9. He's like, I knew I liked him.
This episode is brought to you by our best friends at Spindrift. Yes, you heard me. Best friends. For those who know us, you know how addicted we are to true crime and sparkling water. Cue the day when we were both starring in Broadway shows and stumbled upon the Holy Grail, Spindrift.
America's first sparkling water with real squeezed fruit. Yep, that's it. 11 flavors with no worries about any chemicals going into your body. You'll have a crush on all flavors, trust us.
Oh, and they make the perfect mixer for your holiday bevvies too. Ugh, the possibilities are endless. Just go now to drinkspindrift.com, find your match, and use our sassy sparkling code KILLIT20 at checkout and get 20% off your first order. Self-care, baby. After all, it's necessary in 2020.
Like him.
Nibby's a wonderful man. And he, you know, I actually never have had the looking at him and been like, oh God, cult days. I think if anything, we've had stuff to unwind around not using certain words or like getting into like coaching each other and things like that, you know, where I'd be like, hey, babe, I don't want you to fix me or coach me. I just want you to like hold me right now. Can you do that? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's different. It's calling. Should we answer it or
we
not
must.
Answer it?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. Babe, don't say anything rude because I'm doing the podcast, but we're recording live right now. We were just talking about you in the podcast. I'm with the two women I told you about it that were Broadway actors, and they're taking a break and they have a podcast. Actors or actresses?
Honey, whatever.
Anyway, we're live right now. We were just singing your praises as you called. So I'm going to put you on speaker just to put lots of pressure on you. You could be mad at me later.
Nippy!
Oh, Nippy, hi. We're big fans of you. And
big fans.
We should all have a man defend us like you defended your wife. That's all we're saying. We really appreciate you.
I agree, right?
Oh, yeah. You know,
right.
We are just talking about you. We obviously willed you to call your wife to just let you know that we all, you know, we have a happy crush on you. It's not a bad thing. It's just one of those things where we appreciate your sassiness.
It's just science.
My God. So you have a brother?
He's got three brothers.
Great.
Okay.
By the way, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, just letting you know.
Oh.
Fabulous.
Bring
Jessica,
it on.
You willed this. You played a witch. You clearly are a witch.
Elekonomen, sis. I get it. Yes.
I'll call you in 20. Okay. Love you. Bye.
Nice meeting you.
You too.
Nice meeting
you. Love you silently.
look at this. Look at that face.
Get out of here.
Dreamy. He's a dreamboat.
Come on.
He's a total dreamboat.
A dreamboat.
The thing about Nippy, is that, like, yes, he's a dreamboat, and I married, you know, the quarterback of my high school dream, theater nerd.
Come on, love story. Right? Love story. Right?
Well, and you're pretty gorgeous too. Like, let's be honest. Aww. Those cheekbones.
Real deal. Real deal.
Really. Stunning. Actually stunning.
I do appreciate that. Okay, thank you. I'm blushing. Okay. But I have to tell you, like, I was a total nerd in high school. Like, I was not popular. I was not one of the popular people at all. So it, you know, that's part of my obsession with, you know, getting the hair and everything just so that I've had to let go in the cocoa.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The time of the 1-9. But what we're saying about Nippy, that your question was.
Well, you said that you actually have never looked at him with that thought of your reminder of bad times, that you've actually just, you've had to say, I think what all women do is like, just don't fix me, just listen to me and hug me. And I think that's where we left off.
But also, I'm sorry, if I may, Jen, to your point and to Sarah's, you know, life point, I think a lot of us who watched this really had a visceral reaction to watching someone defend you who loves you so much. And it's one of those things where of course we're all rooting for him in that moment and for you in general, because it was that turning point, at least for the viewer. Right. And we're not even living the life that you had, you know, been taken down the path that you were taken into, really, like, unknowingly. And once he found out about it, I guess, Jen, to the same question, is sort of, how did that come about? And of course he was going to have the reaction that he did, because he's your protector.
Yes. Yeah. Ironically, I mean, and I want it to be known, because the vow didn't really get into this, and more so in my book, I went through, like, the specific details of what happened. Yep. Nobody ever confronted the upper ranks like that. Nobody ever went in like, what the fuck? Because it's dangerous.
I know.
Dangerous thing to do. And the way that we set it up, and this isn't clear in the vow at all, unfortunately, but it's, I don't even know how they would explain this. We had made a plan. So what happened was, you know, I was super uncomfortable with how things were going. I was trying to figure out how to blow it up internally, like maybe write a letter to Nancy, who I assumed didn't know, which was, it was true. She didn't know about that. She knew about other things that she should have done something about, but she didn't know about DOS. And I was feeling uncomfortable and trying to figure out how to expose it. I never thought I was leaving NXIVM. I just was like, I got to get out of this bullshit relationship. Like, this is fucked up. And then Lauren was asking for more collateral. She asked for the deed to my home. Oh. Mark was leaving. Mark was my business partner. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this without Mark. And then finally, Mark and I had a proper conversation. I had to sign an NDA to have that conversation with him.
Ooh, yeah.
So when I had that conversation, and he told me what he knew, which is that women were part of some group and that there was sex involved. And I was like, because I hadn't had that part yet. Right. I hadn't had the assignment to go have sex with Keith.
And you mentioned this in your book. You mentioned this conversation that you had with Mark.
Yes. And this is, like, I think where my book kind of turns into a thriller. And I think it gets really interesting.
I'm telling you, 2 days, Sarah. I listened. I mean, it was the Audible. I listened to the Audible.
Yeah. That's
so,
right.
Oh, yeah. But it was like a fierce listen for me. So, yes, it became a thriller.
Thank you for saying that. I feel like it's kind of exciting, because I put these things together, and then I knew about the branding, which he didn't know. So together we talked and we figured out, like, that it was bad and that it had to be stopped, and that more women, we knew that there was a coach summit coming in and there was going to be more branding. So we decided that we had to stop it. And that we were to leave, but we also knew that we had to leave quietly without them knowing we were leaving, so that we wouldn't get sued, or our reputations wouldn't get tarnished, so people would believe us, because we know how it works, People get shit, don't trust them, and it's true. After I left, cut to, I found out from India and other people who stayed that they told people I was a compulsive liar, that I was mentally unstable. So, how did I get to level green without you guys catching this, you fucking assholes?
Wow. Anyway,
I cannot believe, too, the amount of people it took and the coordination to take down, although it's an organization, this one guy. Like, I could not believe, truly the Rebel Alliance against, you know, this evil empire.
It really was.
I could not believe it.
And there was so many people are like, often think it was just me because it was my face on the cover of the New York Times, but it was a bunch of people. It was a whole, it was like, I couldn't have done it without, we'll get to that in a second, but just to finish this. So Mark and I decided that, and because I had signed this NDA, I felt somehow I was safe under it, which doesn't really make sense legally, but I told him everything I knew, and I didn't feel comfortable telling Nippy because of my collateral. So we decided that Mark would tell Nippy, and as soon as he knew, about it. Mm-hmm. Then I talked to him about it. So it was this weird kind of like, you tell him, so I'm not breaking this secret thing, which is bullshit. Like it didn't make sense, but I was so afraid at that time.
Of course, though. Of course you're going to do it that way, in a wayward way, because you're freaked out.
It's like, I didn't really tell him.
Yeah. So
we decided that he would go in and cause a scene and be upset about the branding, which he was. I mean, that wasn't untrue, but the scene was orchestrated and was legitimate. Like he said how he felt, but we did it so that it would give me also an excuse to be like, well, my husband's really upset and like, I got to fix this and give, buy us a little bit of time so I could fix it. Because we learned from another person who'd left just before us that when you leave a cult, you have to use your own issues as the reason. Like it had to make sense with my personality. And there
it's
was
not you, it's me, like a breakup. It's not you, it's me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the one girl who told me that she had left because or wasn't into ESP. And so when we left, we're like, well, it makes sense that she chose that relationship because she has dependency issues. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, poor girl, never going to work her dependency issues. So we did a similar thing. Dependency,
right.
You know, I'm using Nippy to cover my inner deficiencies. Right. Of course, I'm going to choose him.
Planned or not, in the moment, you brought this up earlier that they have an answer for everything that makes it sound logical. And that's one of the things I think a lot of us responded to when he's confronting Lauren on that audio tape, is that she had an answer for everything. And viscerally, he didn't pause. He just kept coming at her from such an honest place. It just seemed so totally emotionally honest. So planned or not, that's the thing that I think a lot of us really responded to. It was someone who in that moment said everything he wanted to say.
Yeah.
And didn't go back going, oh, I should have said this. It sounded so authentic.
It was very authentic. The only thing that we both wish he'd done was flip over the table of the buffet of eggs. Like if we ever make a series out of this, which maybe will happen, but like we always had these long line of buffet, like with eggs and hash browns. I just like taken that and fucking flipped it into the air.
Or as I like to call it, if you ever watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey, there's a very old episode of Teresa flipping over the table and going, prostitution whore. And she flips over the table. And so that's his prostitution whore moment. And, and
if you do a series too, can I volunteer Jessica and I to be cast in the reenactment of Sweeney Todd?
Absolutely. There's going to be 300 people every week. So I think I'm just making a list of everybody who needs to be in the series, and you guys should be
I will be an extra who just like, you know, I'm on a drug binge, whatever. And I, as orchestrated as this is, I think sometimes that's how it has to be in order to get it done. You had the knowledge that this is how it had to go down in order for you to be able to, in your mind's eye, get out of it the right way. So, so kudos and good on the both of you and your entire group for being able to do that and kind of blindly going through it, because you didn't have anybody to look to for this situation of going, how do we do this the right way? There is no right way.
There's no right way. Actually, that was the last line of the New York Times article, which was there's no playbook for leaving a cult.
Exactly.
I mean, we got some tips, but you know, looking back at it, Nippy and I like acknowledge all the time we had either somebody looking out for us or horseshoe up our butts, but we got out of this mess and took, like, even just the way that the legal system responded in the US blows my mind that we, you know, the New York Times came out in November and then he was arrested in March. And the trial was finished the following June. Like the sentencing took a while, but mostly because of the coco.
Mm.
But
you see how you're using it now?
I'm using it as part of the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm. I'm dancing on Zoom. Hey, I just want you all to know that, ma'am.
She's dancing. Ms. Sarah has told Nippy she would call him in 5 minutes. Do you want to ask her that last question? I feel like you should ask the question.
We answer all your questions?
I wrote 72,000 questions down. Yeah. What are you kidding? Anyway, but my question to you is, and it's obviously twofold here. That chapter in your life, huge chapter, long chapter, you figured out how to get out of the situation. And so I guess I want to know what you learned from that chapter. What did you learn from it? And then number two, because we have a lot of women who listen to us and who follow us personally and who listen to this podcast, what is your advice to anyone who finds themselves in perhaps a situation like yours, if it's in a group or a relationship or a friendship or any kind of stuff like that, because you do have the capacity to psychologically understand what that feels like What is your advice?
I have so much that I learned that I'm going to try to like call it down to just a couple things. Oh God, there's so many.
Or even if you learn something about yourself that I guess you didn't know
like
you had
Jessica
in you.
And Jennifer, like Jessica yeah. and Jennifer, we're like your best friends. A, you learn that.
That's hard.
And what else? What else did you learn?
Totally. BFS for life. Can I come to your shows when they
yeah, you have to come like to the dressing room, yeah. hang out, come backstage, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So many things that I learned. I mean, ironically, there was all this philosophical waxing poetic bullshit that Keith did. And we did it in the trainings. And one of them was about character. And he always talked about, there's a whole characterization. What's your character? And not character like you're in a play, but who is your character? What is it? Who are you? Mm. What is your character made of? Do you have character? Are you honorable and noble? Are you to do noble things? And he would say character, not character, unless it's tested. And we're all sitting around in some, you know, converted Italian restaurant talking about these deep things that I'm sure he stole from other wise philosophers. And not that he's a wise philosopher, he stole from legitimate philosophers.
Yes.
You know, and ironically, I think my character was tested. What I've learned about myself is who I am, what I'm capable of, that I'm strong as fuck. And I know that I can handle hard things and I can get through hard things. And, you know, it was a trauma. Trauma is overcomable. Mm. When you're in the trauma, it's really hard to see that. And that jumps to your advice thing. For people who are in such abusive relationships, it doesn't have to be a cult, because really this isn't about cults. Mm. It's about abuses of power. It happens in relationships and families and religions and businesses.
In
everywhere.
In industries?
Industries, yes. Yeah. In yoga governments. Studios, yes. Governments, directors, producers. Mm-hmm. People can be fucking assholes. And they can abuse their power and treat people like shit. And I think even if you haven't been in a cult, you've been in a situation where you're like, oh my God, what's happening right now? Is he talking to that person that way? That person's a person. How can he speak to that person? I can't say anything. I'm going to lose my job. I'm not going to say anything. And then you like crawl under a rock. You have to say something. And if you can't in that moment, say something, like make a complaint and somewhere or deal with it. But this is the time where these types of abuses are coming to an end. And I feel incredibly empowered and honored to be part of that. And I guess my advice is to say to people that you don't have to stay in those situations. And if you feel like you don't have options, you've got to find someone to help you see those options, because we always do. But I know it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. To your point, the option does exist. A safe option mm-hmm. exists. And to Sarah's point of being able to be part of this movement, which again, it was right around the Me Too movement and all the Harvey Weinstein stuff and all the Me Too stuff, which is so
set the stage.
Yes, it set the stage. It's so important. And for people who feel like they don't have a voice, or that their voice is being silenced, or that they don't know how to get out of it, and they feel very vulnerable to attack, there are so many resources now out there for people yes. to feel empowered. The fact that you took all of these steps, and we call it brave, and I know you said it's a hard word to like wrap your head around, but you are, and you have been, and it makes those of us who get to watch your story, and listen to your story, and read your book, and hear the words that you have to say, it is amazing, and I'm so happy that you have found your life and that you've gotten your life back, and you really are inspirational, and I don't blow smoke. I'm no bullshit, and I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to have this conversation with us. Really.
I can't thank you. I mean, honestly, I'm emotional because also I had a therapy session just before I jumped on here.
mm-hmm. We love therapy.
You're wide open right
yeah,
now.
She's
I'm
open.
Wide open. And I'm feeling mm-hmm. just like letting that resonate and feeling that, because it is so crazy ironic to me, because I always wanted to, ever since I was little, like, I didn't know what this looked like, but I wanted to be an inspiration to other women. Mm. And I thought that that's what I was doing in Nexium, like being a leader and working on my goals and like being the best version of myself. But it mm-hmm. wasn't that. Right. And I mm-hmm. really do strongly believe that the reason I was drawn in to the group in the first place is to be the person to take it down, or, you know, part of that team.
What does John Lennon say? Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. You
yes.
know? Life
I didn't, happened. It was not the path I planned, but mm-hmm. Here I am getting to, I mean, would I ever have met you two had I not done this? No, I get to meet and connect with all these amazing people around the world who are somehow touched by the story. And that means so much to me, A, that I can provide that, but also like for the people who read the story or watch The Vow and go, oh, those are like, I had people reach out saying, I just started a workshop last night and I also started The Vow. And because of The Vow, I see the red flags and I'm getting out of this thing, which turns out to be a cult.
But all
like, how yeah. cool is that?
And that's the way of like, wow. I always talk to people, and I find that the people I'm closest to in my life are the people who have hit a rock bottom and who have had to climb out of it themselves by themselves and figure it out. And it's not always easy. And you might kick yourself in the ass for it and get angry at yourself for the decisions that you didn't make at the time or woulda, shoulda, coulda, woulda, woulda. And then after the fact, full circle now, it's because of your character that that you have inspired so many people to take control and to see these things. And it's because you put yourself out there and you put your neck on the line. And that we, Jen and I talk about that all the time. Like, you have to put yourself out there. This is the only way. Mm-hmm. And it could really suck for a minute, ripping off the Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. But man, oh man, Sarah, your story has resonated for the right reasons with so many people. And the things that you have set out to do that might have felt like they happened in a weird way have all happened for a reason. And you have changed lives and you continue to do so every day.
Oh, that's very affirming and very, very sweet of you. Thank you.
I would sing for good to you right
Thank
now.
You.
I would sing it as, what I said, I would sing for good to, as a duet with you right now.
Oh my God. If I knew the words, I would totally do it.
Someday.
Can you sing to me a minute? Someday.
Someday.
We'll when I come visit you on Broadway.
That's right.
That's what we have to do.
Right. But anyway, we'll stop this here. Sarah, you're so fucking awesome.
And hey, you're fucking awesome. I wanted to read you one thing that a girlfriend of mine sent me. If it pertains, hold on one second.
Yes,
I
please
do. Ready. She is the friend that I saw Wicked with.
Oh.
Yeah. And so this is December 05. Whoa. We saw it on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh shit.
Dear, I'm not going to say her name because she doesn't want to be associated with any of this bullshit. I've heard it said that people can come into our lives for a reason. It's been such a joy getting to know you, sweetie. Please never doubt yourself and your ability. I hope we continue this journey of growth together and know that because I knew you, I'm going to cry and I've been changed for good. Love always, Sarah. And related back to my journey at Nexium, you know, my life is changed for the better with it all. And I know it's been a crazy, awful journey in many ways, and I would make different choices if I had the information, but I love my life now. And that's the making lemonade out of lemons. And that's my main advice, is that you have to turn negatives into positive. Otherwise, it's just too painful. You have to just emerge.
Oh, that's it. Right. The phoenix has to
why
emerge.
We're here. That's why we're here, Jessica. We often say we wouldn't be doing, I mean, the pandemic is something we would give back in a second, but we'd be busy doing other things. I'm not sure we ever would have done this, and we would have missed the opportunity to talk to people like you. So making lemonades out of lemons.
What a joy.
Oh, you are like a dream in 70,000 ways. And I hope we stay in touch because.
Please, me too.
And you know, we are here. You know, we are just here recording everything from home.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Sarah.
Thank you. We'll be in touch, guys.
You're amazing.
Okay.
You're amazing. Thank you for that very lovely chat.
Yay!
To be continued.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll see ya.
Bye.
God, I love her.
I know.
Oh,
she's the best.
God.
We didn't talk about Nancy's eyebrows with Sarah because she mentioned I was really trying to fit it in somehow. Nancy's eyebrows, but oh well. And on that note,
as always, we absolutely love you, killers. Thank you so much for listening, for being fans, and for adding your own information via our social media in every way. And until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Killers, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content. And follow us on Instagram at Killing It on Broadway and Twitter at Killing It on B-Way.
Subscribe to us wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It on Broadway is a production of Killing It on Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.